Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everybody, producer Al here. It's time for another TSFP Presents re-release series here on the Monday podcast feed. This is a series that was first released for patrons over at patreon.com/TSFP back in 2019. Now, I think this is an underrated entry actually in the TSFP Presents canon. It's a history of transfers. Phil, Sid and I discuss the biggest transfers, the best transfers, the worst transfers, the most influential transfers and the most controversial transfers in La Liga history. And remember, if you enjoy this, there is lots more of this kind of thing over at patreon.com/TSFP. Join us there.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series of TSFP Presents. We're calling this...
Transfers?
A history of transfers.
Are we?
Yes.
Did you just decide that unilaterally?
I did. It's welcome fine. To TSFP, a history of transfers. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about some of the best, most interesting, most controversial, worst transfers to have taken place in La Liga over the last few years. We're starting off with the most controversial transfers in a country which lives for controversy.
Lives on polemica.
It really does. I mean, it's hard to overstate. I mean, we laugh about this, but the notion of controversy in Spain is so deeply ingrained
into
society and certainly into journalism.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Well.
I mean, that's kind of what creates the controversy. And of course, it has the elements that are there, but it's controversial through the way that it's played out in the media so often.
Yes.
And then obviously then through there into the fans and so on.
I mean, anything can be controversial.
Yes.
Anything and everything
but
is
especially football.
Especially football.
And especially transfers.
And especially the transfers that we are going to talk about on today's programme. As I said, in subsequent podcasts, we're going to be talking about the best transfers, i.e. the ones that played the best for the best value
well. That had the biggest impact, the most influential transfers.
We can certainly do some worse ones as well. There's quite a lot of very bad transfers around.
Yes, so we're going to delve into the history books and look back at some of the best, worst and most controversial transfers. Some of them in the not-so-distant past and some of them very much in the far-distant past.
Yeah, we were talking about this bit just before we went on air, but obviously possibly the most historically controversial transfer of all time is one that precisely because of that historic significance... We were going to leave out of today and do another time, which of course is the signing of Alfredo Di Stéfano, which takes so much unpacking, which takes so much historical explaining.
How many chapters in your book was it?
Well, it's effectively two chapters in my book. I mean, there's one that's directly about the transfer, but then about the impact of Di Stéfano, which of course is gigantic, is another one.
Okay. Do you want to sort of condense that into sort of 30 to 40 seconds?
He played for Millonarios, was owned by River Plate, and both Real Madrid and Barcelona wanted to sign him. Both Real Madrid and Barcelona thought they'd signed him. Both Real Madrid and Barcelona had agreements to sign him, and he ended up at Real Madrid. And how that happened is incredibly complex.
Okay. Do you want to give us a condensed version of how that happened?
Oh, do you want to save that for the pod about
Shall we save that for the pod about the most influential?
Because that might be the most influential.
Yeah, and I mean, as I say, it almost feels like we could do four shows on just that.
All right.
But it's also, I mean, it's illustrative in that it involves Real Madrid and Barcelona. Several of the controversial transfers we're going to talk about involve either Real Madrid or Barca or both, naturally because they are the clubs that generate the most noise. But I think in particular... Some of the interesting ones that we're going to talk about is when it's Madrid or Barca losing a player to the other one. And I think that tells you something about the kind of the psyche, the idea that when you're Madrid or Barcelona, you feel like you are the pinnacle, you are the biggest club in the world.
Yeah.
You should never lose a player if you don't want to, unless you let a player go. And so when you get a player leaving a Madrid or a Barca against the will of the club, there's that feeling that something in the natural order of things is, has gone wrong. This shouldn't happen. And then, that's why it generates such levels of outrage.
And also why it does so much damage. And obviously, you know, one of the natural places to start with this is Luis Figo, which is possibly, in terms of transfers, the biggest there's ever been. I mean, as I say, Di Stefano is the biggest in terms of the impact, in terms of everything to do with it. But when you say to a Spanish football fan, tell me a controversial transfer, tell me a fichaje polémico, and everyone says, Luis Figo. And one of the things that's so significant about it isn't just what happened, it's the damage that it did to Barcelona. It's the way that it destroyed them. And it destroyed the presidency of Joan Gaspart. There's no two ways about that. And you talked to Gaspart about this, which I've done. And, you know, he is torn apart by the remorse
still
from this. Yes, by the sense that any chance he ever had of being a good Barcelona president was destroyed by the fact that the first thing he did when he took power was have to oversee the departure of their best player. Mm. And that he then managed
and not
that,
just the departure.
Not just the departure, but to Real Madrid. And then he managed it, by his own admission, so badly. He had all this money. There's this great line. He says, well, he said, I have all this money from Figo, and we'll do Figo in a minute, but just kind of the consequences of Figo first, which I know is a bit back to front, but it kind of makes sense. I had all this money. And he said, and instead of doing what I should have done, which is to say to the board, gentlemen, this has happened. We've got to deal with it. Let's take this calmly. Let's just not lose our heads. He said, instead of doing that, he said, I had a big suitcase full of money and I went onto the streets to sign. And he said, when you go onto the streets to sign with a big suitcase full of money, you're fucked. And that's basically what happened.
I mean, how many times have we seen that when a club sell a player for a lot of money and then end up going on a spending spree and replacing
them with all sorts of nonsense? Well, this historic precedent in mind, this is why I was suggesting last summer, or the summer before rather, that when Neymar went, the worst thing Barcelona could do was go and spend that Neymar money.
Yes. No, I remember you saying that.
And actually, I might not be entirely wrong, because it's taken a year for Dembele to be good, but people are worrying about Coutinho now. They spent €300 million on those two players, and it was partly because of the pressure of going, oh my God, we've lost this amazing player. What do we do? Quick, let's spend cash.
How did Figo leave Barcelona to join Real Madrid?
How do we start this? I mean, the context and there's so many elements to this, but let's start with the first thing is that Luis Figo. And this is one of the many stories about Luis Figo's transfers that I really like. Luis Figo wins the Ballon d'Or just after joining Real Madrid. Essentially has won the Ballon d'Or for what he'd done the season before at Barcelona. That's the first thing to say. He is the best player in the world at this
point. At his absolute peak and at his as well.
Peak. And at the apex of his genuinely career. A brilliant player. A guy called Angel Mour, who used to be I suppose you'd call him the masseuse, the kit man, the kind of the all-round bloke in the dressing room at Barcelona for many years, for about 30 years, and before him his dad was. So there was this kind of destiny is not the word I'm looking for.
Hereditary.
Dynasty is the word I'm looking for. Of kind of confessors of the Barcelona's faith, if you like.
You get that with kit men sometimes. They do tend to be hereditary positions.
This kind of sort of sense of there's some sort of spiritual importance almost. Anyway, he had created this mini museum in his little office just off the Barcelona dressing room. And in this mini museum, he had loads of photographs and boots and that sort of stuff. And he asked Luis Figo, after he'd left Barcelona and after he'd won the Ballon d'Or, could he please have a photograph of him with the Ballon d'Or for his mini museum? Now, Figo, of course, still has a relationship with him, even though publicly everyone is breaking off relationships with Figo. Figo gives him a picture. Luis Figo standing there in his Real Madrid kit holding the Ballon d'Or. The next time Figo went back to Barcelona, someone with a blue and red pen had coloured in his kit as if to say, yeah, mate, you won this playing for Barcelona. And so this is the best player in the world that Real Madrid take from Barcelona.
You talk about him going back. The second time he went back to the Camp Nou.
This may well be the most, I mean, genuinely, I think the most famous picture in Spanish football history is the picture of a pig's head looking up from the turf at the Camp Nou.
Mm.
Although you have to say, I think for people who haven't seen it, if you haven't seen the photo or the images or the video, when we say pig's head, you're probably imagining it to be quite a bit bigger than it actually was. Like, it's quite a small pig.
I mean, it's
head.
A suckling pig.
Yeah, it's not, you know, you've got, like, in that photo, you sort of have to look for it before you spot it.
Yes, you do. But at the same time, it's still a bloody pig's head.
It really is. I mean, we're not a bloody pig's head.
No, but it would have been a bit oozy.
You reckon?
Well, there was a great interview. I remember this really clearly. There was a great interview with one of the famous cochineal chefs from Segovia, the king of the El Rey de los Cochinillos, the king of the cochinillos, the king of the suckling pigs, in Marca about a week later, asking him about this, and him saying this is a total lack of respect to the pig. Yes. You know, this is a fine dish. It's the symbol of our city. Yes. And he said, and it would have smelt terrible and would have been secreting some sort of liquid. So who takes that into the stadium in the first place?
It's the degree of forethought that I think is kind of impressive.
But I think that, you know, the suckling pig's head is what made this transfer perhaps the most iconic of all.
That's
the controversial
icon
transfers.
Is the word, isn't it? It's an image. It's an image.
In perhaps European football. I mean, maybe there's. Yeah, I'm sure that. There's certain madness has gone on in South America, but in terms of European football.
But like you say, the funny thing is that wasn't even his first trip back. Yes. It was the second game, and it's also it is worth. I think we've talked about this before, but it is worth watching the video of how long Luis Figo spends trying to take that corner.
Yes.
Because there are so many stop starts before the game eventually gets suspended for about 20 minutes. By the referee because they can't take it because stuff keeps raining down.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to try and go through the sort of the nuts and bolts, if you like, of this.
I mean, there is an entire chapter on this transfer in Sid's book, Fear and Loathing in La Liga. So for more detailed information about this transfer, refer to your copy, which I'm sure you all have.
Well, I have it open in front of me now just because one or two of the actual specific details I wanted to make sure I didn't get wrong. But I mean, the basic context of this is the best player in the world. And there are presidential elections at Real Madrid. Mm. Now, what happens with the presidential elections at Real Madrid is that Florentino Pérez, who's the current president, is bidding to become president of Real Madrid at a time when Real Madrid have just won the European Cup. So, in theory, at least, he doesn't have a very strong chance. Mm. He carries out a survey, basically, which effectively asks Real Madrid fans who they would most like to buy. And obviously, Figo's not the only name that appears, but Figo's name does appear, and this is from Barcelona. So Florentino Pérez sees the possibility of getting someone from Barcelona who would be a huge signing, a huge impact, and of course, a huge vote winner. This is the key. Never forget that this is about an election campaign, a huge vote winner. Now, Figo's buyout clause at the time, because he's in the midst of negotiations with Barcelona, which aren't going well over a new contract. So there is a context there, which is he's someone who, at the very least, is prepared to listen to other offers and, at the very least, is prepared to try and exercise some pressure. And this is the key thing on Barcelona. His buyout clause is 10,000 million pesetas, around about 38, 40 million pounds at the time, which means a world record. But actually, it's not a buyout clause that's totally beyond the realms of the possible. A bit like Neymar's wasn't when he went into PSG. Florentino Pérez goes to Figo's agent, a guy called Jose Vega, and offers him 400 million pesetas, £1.5 million roughly, to sign an agreement which says, if you win the elections, I will join Real Madrid. Now, part of the trump card here for Florentino Pérez is it's impossible that he's going to win the elections. Mm. Vega thinks this is money for nothing, says, okay then, and signs this deal. Of course, this deal gets out publicly. Mm. Now, this deal is supposed to be private as well. This gets out publicly. Well, of course it gets...
Wonder how it got out.
Yeah, of course it gets out publicly, because for this to help you win an election, it needs to get out publicly.
This was when there were still elections.
Yes, this is when there were still... this is absolutely huge. Figo denies everything. Mm-hmm. Says, look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. He tells his Barcelona teammates and his best mates, Luis Enrique and Pep Guardiola, I'm not leaving. He does an interview with Sport newspaper saying, I can promise you I will be here at the start of next season. He calls Florentino Pérez a liar. He calls him a fantasist. He says, there's no way this is happening. Right? But what happens, of course, is because this has gone out, and because also, and actually one of the things that's forgotten about that election campaign, Florentino Pérez did an incredible job in terms of rounding up the postal votes. Mm. So that it wasn't just about winning on the day, it was about kind of gathering votes in advance. And it was very... very cleverly managed, that side of things. I love this particular quote. Lorenzo Sanz, who of course was running against Florentino Pérez, when Figo says this is complete nonsense, he's of course delighted because it damages Pérez's election campaign, theoretically. And he says, oh, next thing you know, he's going to be announcing the signing of Claudia Schiffer. Obviously that doesn't happen.
No.
But the signing of Luis Figo does. When Barcelona are confronted by this, when it looks like Florentino Pérez is going to win, the man who's about to become the Barcelona president is Joan Gaspar. And this is what I mean by his presidency is ruined by this, because this is the start. He's confronted with an issue, which is the only way you can stop this is by paying a penalty clause, because Figo and Pérez has agreed a penalty clause. 5,000 million pesetas, £19 million effectively, right? And Figo, according to Gaspart, basically begs him, please pay this. You know, we've really fucked it up. My agent has got this horribly wrong. He's practically suicidal. He's crying. He's under pressure. He knows he's got this wrong. Pay this clause and I'll stay and that's the end of it, right? But Gaspart thinks, well, I would have to effectively pay the fifth highest transfer fee in history to sign my own player. And there's another problem. Pérez had made a promise during the election campaign. If Figo doesn't come, you all come to games for free for a season. Every season ticket holder gets his season ticket for free. So the way that Gaspar looks at this is, hang on, I would be paying for 70,000 Real Madrid fans to go to football for free for a year. Me, the president of Barcelona, would be paying for Real Madrid fans to go to football free. And he decided, I just can't do this. So in the end, he decides, there's a whole series of negotiations still, they're trying to get out of it, he can't stop this.
You've subsequently spoken to him. Does he regret that decision? Does he feel because that he should have kept it?
No. He says he doesn't regret that decision because he could not have accepted that. He could not have accepted that a president of Barcelona does that. Mm. But I think he regrets that he was in a position where he couldn't do anything else. I think he has...
He must really hate the agent.
Yes, he really does. And I think he really hates Figo. I mean, he says him and Figo have spoken, but he feels manoeuvred. And as I say, he feels like it killed him as well. Figo, by the way, when I spoke to Figo about this, Figo's very interesting.
Yes.
Because Figo's like...
Do you believe him?
Yes, because actually I think he was surprisingly honest. Because listen to some of the things he said. He said, I said to him, direct question, did you want to go to Real Madrid? And he said, empezó siendo un calentón y terminó siendo la realidad. In other words, it started with me being angry, a hot-headed moment, and it ended up being true. In other words, him saying to Barca, stop pissing around, I'm going to Madrid, I'll sign that, that'll show him. Mm. And then realising, oh. And there's another line he says, which I think is absolutely key, and he said, it didn't only depend on me. Mm. I think, no doubt about it, Figo didn't want to go, was manoeuvred into a position where he couldn't get out of it, and the biggest transfer in history happened, despite the fact that only one person really wanted it to happen. And that was Florentino, who got what he wanted.
He did. He often does.
Yes, he does. Yeah, that is true.
Yes. So, I mean, he played an absolute blinder there, to be honest.
Yes, he did. Oh, without doubt. Without doubt.
We're going to move on, but obviously we kicked off and spent quite a bit of time on that because it is the biggest of controversial transfers.
Well, there's been nothing like it. There wasn't anything quite like it before either.
No. Having said that, we're going to move on and talk about another transfer involving both Barcelona and Real Madrid, that of the current Spain national coach, Luis Enrique.
Going the other way.
Going the other way.
But not in the same circumstances.
No, not quite in the
same circumstances. No, but the degree of anger, certainly until Figo happened, because of course, bear in mind that Luis Enrique's happens in 95, I think, 96. Or 1996. In terms of anger... That was huge for a long time, and it's been completely eclipsed by Figo.
Yes.
But at the time, it was absolutely enormous, the response to that.
Of course, the difference being that in this case, it wasn't the case of a buyout clause being paid. It was the end of his contract.
Yes.
They couldn't agree a new contract, and so he could go where he...
And also, he always felt that he was pushed out by Real Madrid. Mm.
Well, he had a difficult relationship even before that with the fans, didn't he? Where he was, to a certain extent, sort of targeted by the Blue Boys, even
when things weren't going well. He always...
Difficult relationship.
Yeah, he always felt... He always said he felt kind of alone. He felt under pressure. He felt that people blamed him.
And there was pushed around the team in terms of position.
In terms of position. He wasn't getting in the team. There was a moment when he was left out of the team... Quite a nice quote from Jorge Valana, who was the manager, of course, at the time, had left him out saying, I'm going to rest him. And Luis Enrique coming out and basically saying, I'm so rested, I can't remember if the phrase was, I'm so rested I could run up Everest, or something like that. It was along those lines, you know. But rested, I don't need
He's
to be rested.
He's always been very quotable.
Sense. Obviously, what made that big, in a way, was his response afterwards.
Yes.
Was how completely he embraced Barcelona.
Yes.
As a way of kind of turning his nose at Madrid. And there's a lovely line where he talks about how he sees photographs of himself in white and it doesn't look right to him.
Oh, that is a good quote as well.
Yeah, white's not my colour.
Ah, that's an excellent quote. Yeah. And obviously he was, you know, as you said, quite passionate whenever he played for Barcelona against Real Madrid.
Yes.
And talking about passion as well, there's a great symmetry in terms of one of his most famous goal celebrations, which is one he had done... I think when he'd scored for Madrid against Barca, when he pulled
down
the
shirt,
and then he replicated exactly the same celebration but wearing a Barcelona shirt when he scored against Real Madrid, I think, in his second year as a Barca player. Ended up scoring 5 goals over the course of his career as a Barca player against Real Madrid as well.
And there was some complaints after he celebrated like mad, having scored against Real Madrid. I think it was Lorenzo Sanz, who was the president at the time, the one who then lost to Florentino.
Yes.
And moaning about how much he was celebrating. And Luis Enrique came after the game and said, well, if he wants, next time I'll cry.
Yes. So Luis Enrique, very quotable, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great. Also, in all of this, of course, this kind of background rivalry Real Madrid thing, my favourite moment, which is sort of related to this but maybe not entirely, was his first season as manager of Barcelona, when that kind of underlying prickliness, but also I think he enjoyed it. I think he enjoyed the winding up and he enjoyed playing the game. And there was that famous, because it was bizarre, quote on the front of AS when he was struggling, saying, Luis Enrique is swimming through chewing gum.
Yes.
And no one knew what this meant. It didn't mean anything. It was total nonsense. Anyway, 2 weeks later, building up for the Clásico, Luis Enrique, manager of Barcelona, puts a photo up on Instagram or Twitter saying, here we are in the office preparing for the Clásico. And it's him and his staff and the computers there and they're all open. And just in the foreground, just in the corner of the desk, is a packet of chewing gum. And you know 100% that was deliberate.
There's also a great picture of him and Zidane sort of going at it.
Yeah. Oh,
and Luis Figo's there as well, almost trying to hold Zidane back. Yeah, they get right up in each other's faces. That is a brilliant photo.
But yeah, as you say, you know, before Figo happened, this was a
massive,
big deal.
Yeah, you know, I was right. It wasn't the same in the sense that, you know, people could understand the fact that he was leaving. People could understand the fact that he wanted to go. But it was that he sort of revelled in the rivalry afterwards, and he kept saying, you know, Barcelona's a great place, Catalans are wonderful. He was effectively saying, you lot, up yours.
Yeah.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house, everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Is it worth mentioning, before we move on to other clubs and other rivalries, one player who played for both clubs, we've talked about him many times before in these podcasts.
Gorgeous.
But lovely.
But the difference being that he is still sort of loved by both Michael Laudrup.
Partly because when he played his first game for Real Madrid against Barcelona, the fans were vicious and he was clearly very badly affected by it. And because he was so decent and because everybody knew that fundamentally he'd been forced out of Barcelona by Cruyff, that fundamentally he was in a position where he couldn't stay, I actually think the fans felt guilty at how badly they treated him on that game back. And so sort of since then, they backed away from it a bit. And he always conducted himself with such dignity that now the battle between Madrid and Barcelona fans over Laudrup is almost for ownership. It's like, oh, he's more ours than yours, but we both love him.
Well, I mean, he was only a Real Madrid player for 2 years. Yeah. Yes. And he was 5 years at Barcelona.
It was enough to make him the
king of Spain.
Yes. You've told that story a number of times.
Have, yeah, I'm not going to tell it again. Yeah.
It's the actual king of Spain.
Yeah. Telling him he was the king of Spain. Yeah.
He was the king of Spain. But yes, you're right. There is something of a battle for ownership over the legend of Michael Laudrup. Very much different to the other two cases that we've mentioned. Yes. Very much different. Moving on and talking about Real Madrid, but with another team involved, that of Valencia, and the start of a real rivalry between these two clubs. And it began with the transfer of Petr Mijatovic from Valencia to Real Madrid. But before this, these two clubs had a pretty cordial relationship.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, it started
the fans didn't hate each other, really.
No, it started to turn a little bit because Paco Roche, who was the president of Valencia at the time, was quite kind of pugnacious and was very conscious of trying to make Valencia big.
Mm. You know?
And the curious thing is that Mijatovic kind of created, or at the very least, crystallised the rivalry between Valencia and Real Madrid. And Paco Roche was very vociferous about it. And yet he hadn't wanted to sign Mijatovic in the first place. He wanted to sign Romario. Romario went to Barcelona. Mijatovic went to Valencia. Mijatovic was absolutely brilliant at Valencia. You know, he's the key striker in that season when Atleti win the double and Valencia go to the final day with a chance of winning it. I think he scores 28 goals in 95-96. Mm. And Real Madrid come for him.
Yeah, once again, a case of he was their best and most important player. Madrid say, we'll have some of that.
Yeah, and Madrid say, have some of that and pay the buyout clause as well. So this was done behind Valencia's back and it It was, I mean, obviously that's the real reason. It's not just the fact that he went, although there's a big part of that. It's the way it was played out.
But why did this leave such a scar on Valencianismo? Why did it cause such a deep-rooted sort of
I think because scar, they felt that, first of all, because he was brilliant at a time when this Valencia team probably were in a position where they thought we could become the biggest team in Spain, or one, or a genuine contender. As I say, in with a chance to win the league in 96, cup finalists in the famous cup final against Depor. Is it the following year or the year before? The year before, I think. But, you know, a really, really strong side. It's also, as I say, the way it happened. So there's a moment when Paco Roch goes to Mijatovic's house. Now, of course, all these stories get told. That's the other thing in all this.
Manipulation
is the order of the day in so many of these cases. And that's certainly true, for example, in another transfer that maybe we'll talk about, I don't know, today or on another day, which is the departure of Sergio Ramos from Sevilla to Real Madrid. There's a lot of manipulation there. But Paco Roch goes to his house and says, look me in the eyes and tell me you're not leaving. And Mijatovic says, don't worry, I'm not going. Paco Roch had given him an expensive watch as a kind of a gesture of good faith because they were going through contract negotiations. Of course, he knew that the buyout clause, which was 1,250 million pesetas, you're talking about around about £7-8 million in 96, which is a lot of money but not impossible to pay. And then also Mijatovic, towards the end, at a time when he's saying that this isn't done, he had a like a kind of a what would you call it, an encuentro, a dinner, I suppose, a meeting with the supporters clubs of Valencia, and he told them he wasn't leaving. And I think that was part of it. And of course, so when it broke, they were like, hang on, it's not just that you're going, you told us you weren't.
And is it maybe that, okay, he went in those kind of circumstances and then did what he did with Real Madrid
absolutely
as well?
Because the other thing is, when he finally went, he thought it would help him to say, look, it's nothing against you, you've supported me. And by the way, they'd supported him when his son Luca was very, very, very ill. In childbirth, there's all sorts of problems, and Luca eventually passed away. I'm not quite sure how long after. But the Valencia fans have really supported him, you know, with banners and chants and so on, and backed him. And he said, look, I really appreciate everything you've done. But, and he thought he was helping. He said, but I want to go and win things. And of course, this Valencia team that is emerging is essentially saying, what? So you're now saying we can't win things. And of course, as you say, that was then reinforced by him going and winning
the
European Cup.
When he goes
and
scores the winning goal in the European Cup.
And so that actually should have helped him in a way, but didn't.
But like you say, and that the scars, you know, well, in some senses, continue to this day. But in terms of the relationship between the clubs, you then had some big moments, like when Madrid wanted to sign Mendieta,
yes,
for example.
And Valencia basically fought it. And Valencia
and sent him to Lazio.
And from Madrid's point of view, that's exactly part of it. It's like, you can't have him, we'll give him to them, just so you can't have him.
Yeah.
And Madrid certainly, I think, would feel that they don't understand, or maybe they do understand, but they don't appreciate or they don't like the fact that Valencia have been perfectly happy to sell players to Barcelona and significantly less happy to sell players to Real Madrid. And they would say, well, you know, this is absurd, this doesn't mean anything, this anti-Madridista feeling, within Madrid at least, they would say that they don't understand it from Valencia. But it starts with Mijatovic.
And it's still there, I think, to this day, a certain level. Moving on and discussing another a Real Madrid legend and an Atletico Madrid legend.
Well, he's got a plaque outside the Wanda.
In Hugo Sanchez.
It's a bit of a mess.
You might not want to step on it.
You might not be able to see it.
I went on the Wanda tour over Christmas and made a point of stopping to have a look at Hugo Sanchez's plaque outside, and it had stickers on it and scratches across it. Obviously, they clean every day.
Yeah, so I mean, it has had a lot worse.
People have put kind of dog shit on it and stuff like that and rubbish. So it gets cleaned up. But of course, the scratching becomes semi-permanent and the stickers are quite difficult to take off and that sort of thing.
So symbolic, isn't it?
Yeah. El Escudo No Se Toca was one of the stickers that was on there. So, but obviously his little plaque, you do. And that's the whole argument, isn't it, about which players do you put out there? Because he's a legend, because their definition of legend is anyone over 100 games. He's also a legend because he was top scorer for them. He was a brilliant player.
Yeah, you know, Pichichi in the league, I think, scored 19 goals that.
Which is what also the other, you know, the context to this is the ones you hate, of course, the ones you loved. I might remember Michael Laudrup saying to me something along the lines of, you know, there's that line about no one hates a woman or man more than his divorced former husband or wife. And I suppose there's something in there.
The great thing
So that it was the fact that you love them so much that then means that the hatred becomes more, or the bitterness or the hurt is so great.
Well, that's also reflecting the way that they had to actually do the deal to him to go from Atleti to Real Madrid. They couldn't do it directly because that was seen as being too much. They had to orchestrate this weird triangular thing where in the space of a week He went from Atletico, was it to UNAM, who his original club, and then to Real Madrid?
Yeah, there's a bridge there. So and actually, the idea of the bridge is something that's been floated quite a lot since then, but never really actually happened.
So it's a bit like if you were saying that with the divorcees, you'd hate them even more if they then subsequently got with your brother or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly. Which is kind of what's happening. Exactly, yeah. There's a song, isn't there, about basically... Which is effectively saying, you know, watch your new partner, like, I bet he's handsome, I bet he's rich, I bet he's treating you better than I ever did, all this sort of stuff. Can't for the life of me think which song that is.
But Hugo Sanchez then went on and scored a hell of a lot of goals for Real Madrid as well, without many touches.
Yeah, that season where he gets 38 goals all of a single touch is just, I mean, it's just bonkers, isn't it? And, by the way, that was a record that had stood for 50 years until Messi and Ronaldo and actually Luis Suarez overtook it in the last, six, 7 years?
Yeah, in terms of scoring that number of
goals. That many goals, 38 goals as a league season. It was just an extraordinary record.
It really is, actually.
Because, it's incredible. I mean, I think it was Telmo Thatcher who'd done it before him. And so you're talking, off the top of my head, I can't tell you, but I think it's 50 years between Thatcher and Hugo Sanchez. And then, of course, Hugo Sanchez, who did it in 1990, I think, would have, obviously by definition, held on to that record for, 22, 23 years before anyone else had overtaken it? Mm. Quite something.
But as you say, it did not go down very well with the Atletico Madrid fans. And still to this day, as we said...
They still hate him.
They still
absolutely hate him.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about Danilson. And Danilson, the other one, Rivaldo. Let's talk about Rivaldo.
Another tricky Brazilian.
Yeah, the other tricky Brazilian. Let's talk about Rivaldo and his move from Deportivo La Coruña to Barcelona.
There's a theme developing here, because this is another buyout clause. Because, of course, that's the way to have a hostile bid and get away with it.
So, yeah, this was what it was,
4,000
million pesetas.
Which is, I mean, it used to be the rough rule of thumb was you take off the last two noughts and half it. So 4,000 million pesetas, around about £20 million. So at a time when that was a lot of money.
So this is only a year after Mijatovic.
Plus VAT, by the way. They had to pay, I think, 600 million euros, a million pesetas VAT.
So why is this controversial?
Well, I don't think it is that controversial in some ways. Let me explain by what I mean by that. In the... For a lot of Deportivo fans, even in this era, because this is 96-97, the year I lived in Oviedo that he played for Depor, and he was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. Even then, when Depor aspire to be a great team, when obviously they don't know at this stage, but they're only 2 years off winning the league title and all that sort of thing, there's still a sensation that, look, it's natural when your best players go to Madrid and Barcelona. It's kind of what happens, unless you really do aspire to be very, very big. So in that sense, it sort of wasn't that controversial. I think what was controversial was, again, the sense that they apply the buyout clause. They made it impossible for Depor to do anything about it.
And it was wasn't it quite late in terms of the final day?
He'd played... in the what's the
Teresa Depor- Rivera?
Teresa Rivera.
Herrera. No.
Trofeo Herrera. Trofeo. Whatever the preseason. I forgot. Yeah. My mind's gone totally blank. Yes, it is. The preseason Deportivo tournament the day before, I think, and scored a penalty as well. I mean, you know, and he. I think what made it kind of controversial was that it happened so late. Was that Barcelona kept on trying to do a deal that they weren't interested in, and then said, "All right, well, we'll pay it then." End of story. Barcelona, by the way, the day they signed him, Steve McManaman was in a hotel in Barcelona waiting to sign for Barcelona. The reason McManaman didn't sign for Barcelona was because Rivaldo did.
That's a great story. Is that in your book?
No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
I mean, obviously, I know it's not in your book because I've read it several times.
Obviously. But, and taken on every single word.
Yes. Oh, wow.
So McManaman then obviously went to Real Madrid and won... Two European Cups and two league titles, including scoring in the semi-final against Barcelona at the Camp Nou. So, you know, Maka came out of it all right. But I think it was that. And also, I think it was the coldness that Rivaldo showed. And I also think there was the sort of the sense that there was a frustration because Barcelona had cocked up really badly and lost Brazilian Ronaldo at the end of that season when he had been the best player I've ever seen in terms of a single season, in terms of impact, in terms of, God, where's this guy come from? This is amazing. And they lost him at the end of the season because they...
Maybe he might appear in the best transfers.
Yes,
podcast.
Absolutely. You know, they lost him in a deal to Inter Milan, basically because they didn't control the situation with his contract renewals and so on. And I think there was a frustration in A Coruña at the fact that, oh, you lose our guy and we're the ones who pay for it.
Okay, moving on. Last couple of controversial transfers.
Let's spread our wings a bit and go a bit more. Go around Spain.
Yes. Let's go to the Basque Country, shall we?
Let's go to the Basque Country, right. Tell me, Sydney, about the transfer involving Joseba Echeverria.
Well, let's... Nicely said. Let's start with what happened recently, the signing of Iñigo Martínez from Athletic Bilbao.
Which is probably, I mean, we've talked about Figo. Since Figo, Iñigo Martínez might be the most controversial
that we've seen. And again, this is partly not just because of the transfer in itself, because even Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao with the rivalry they've got, even within that, there is, I wouldn't say an acceptance, but there is an awareness from Real Sociedad that Athletic Bilbao have financial muscle and can come for your players. And of course, the buyout clause was paid. But it's not just that. It's that Iñigo Martínez in 2014 said, I would never play for the other side.
Never.
And of course, the money came and he did. Now, Real Sociedad knew this would happen. They knew well in advance it would happen. Mm. They knew this was a possibility. And this is one of the frustrations of the fact that he didn't go to play with Ernesto Valverde at Barcelona, because that would have prevented him from going to Athletic Bilbao. But what this really did was recover or remind people of the Echeverria transfer, which I think was the beginning of a certain, maybe not the beginning, but again, the crystallisation, if you like, of a certain sense of tension between Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao, partly because Real Sociedad feel, it's all well and good, Athletic Bilbao saying they're the Basque national team, they're the ones who symbolise Euskadi, they're the ones who have this policy, but actually they can only do it because they have the financial muscle to take kids off us when they're very young.
The best of Alcantara.
That's the thing. It's it's the frustration and the anger at saying you present yourself as a team of Cantera, of youth system, but you are the big shark, if you like, in the youth system pool. Mm. And of course, Echeverria is a good example of that because he signed at 17. Mm. You know, this star player who signed for not a huge amount of money, by the way.
But it was the most expensive ever under 18 player in Spain.
550 million pesetas. Again, take the last two digits off and half it, £2.5-3 million, more or less. Mm. So not a massive amount of money, but as you say, a huge amount of money in July 95 for a 17-year-old. Again, there's a certain degree of mythology in this, in that the two clubs were talking, or were trying to talk. Athletic were trying to talk to Real Sociedad, they were trying to make offers. At the same time, Echeverria was in contract renegotiations with Real Sociedad. I think he wanted 150,000 pesetas, which is not actually a huge amount of money annually, wasn't offered it. He'd just come off the back, I think, of being quite successful with Spain's under-20s at the World Cup. And so there was this kind of sense that, you know, this is a really good kid who you've got to give a good deal to keep him. And then he went. And of course, what that does is then it reinforces the idea that he went for money and he went because they had more financial muscle. It's also probably true that Athletic are the bigger club, if not always purely in footballing terms, but the bigger institution anyway.
Well, I mean, yes, definitely.
Yeah. There's a great photograph. I remember a photograph in AS or Marca of his first game back at Anoeta for Athletic Bilbao. First game back. It was at Anoeta with the running track. And a photograph, and people were throwing bottles at him. And obviously, with the running track, it was very unlikely that you were going to reach it. I remember this photograph, and it was kind of done on a wide angle picture so you could get some of the running track in, with a circle around all the bottles. And I think they counted 18 or something, 17 or 18 of these bottles. And as I say, it was more that symbolism of, okay, you talk about Cantera, but you're taking our Canteranos.
Yes. So that's a bit more like a sort of a big brother.
Bullying
big brother. Well, there we go. Two Basque signings there, and as we said, Iñigo Martínez, the more recent one, and that was pretty hurtful as well for La Real. Let's finish by talking about Sosulia.
I like it. Yeah.
Yes, the. Well, he's not a neo-Nazi, or is he?
Well, I don't know. I'm really uneasy about giving an answer to that.
To the bottom of it, but he certainly claimed that he wasn't.
No.
I think it's quite complicated because of the situation in Ukraine. Yes. But anyway, his loan move to Rayo Vallecano didn't work out. it was short-lived. Lasted hours.
Hours.
Betis before he was sent on his way, unfortunately.
Yes, obviously, Rayo Vallecano famously have left-leaning ultras, at least, anyway, and they weren't happy with some of the comments that Sosulia had posted.
And some of the photographs as well, some of the militia groups that he'd supported, actively supported in Ukraine. As you say, it's complex, and it's one I can't claim to know enough about because of the nature of the relationship with political ideologies for a start, but also in particular the nature of the Ukraine-Russian conflict and what that means, that the iconography really means, if you sort of mean.
No, but I mean, ultimately, it shows the sort of the fan power that was exercised.
And look, it also had a happy ending. He's now at Albacete.
Yes.
And he's doing all right, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure how happy it is to end up at Albacete.
We've discussed this before, haven't we?
Sorry about that, Albaceteños.
Yes, but there. Right, there we go. We went on a little bit longer than we thought we might, but I think that might be a running theme.
One very, very brief okay. one to add to this. Because that was a deal that didn't happen because his own fans were unhappy. The other one, very famously, recently, Danny Guitha. Who started his career at Jerez, yes. who went round lots and lots of places and said lots of very silly things over the years. One of the things he said, well, he would never ever play for Cardiff. Cardiff then signed him at his own presentation. As he's there doing the kick-ups, they're shouting abuse at him. Well yes. played, Daniel.
Yes.
If there's one thing we've learned in this episode, if you're a player, never say never. Just yes. keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's true.
Although I'd much rather players spoke, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but don't say, I will never do this. Just
oh, that's
especially
true.
If you
keep
might.
An open mind. Yes. Yes. Yes, keep an open mind. Keep an open mind, guys. We've got more of these transfer pods are coming up. We might do the best next week.
Record-breaking or record-breaking. Yeah, something like that.
Yes, so there we go.
We'll come up with some
clever it's all been
theme.
Planned in advance, honest. It's...
As you can see.
There we go. TSFP presents a history of transfers. Next episode coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll speak to you then. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.